Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
You begin to question not just this one hire, but many hires, right? You wonder whether the administration has done background checks.
An investigation shows Anchorage's former health director lied about his education and military experience. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, August 9th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, federal officials hope to expand broadband access throughout the state.
This is a once-in-a-generation opportunity. People say that, but it's quite true. These kinds of resources, they don't come along very often.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
Anchorage Mayor Dave Bronson says he's launching an investigation into how his own administration failed to catch the fake credentials of his former health director. Joe Gerace resigned yesterday, citing health issues after Alaska Public Media confronted him with evidence that the resume he used to get the job was fabricated. A joint investigation with American Public Media found that Gerace misrepresented his military, medical, and educational background to get the job. Curtis Gilbert and Lex Trinan broke the story, and they're here to talk about it. Curtis, what led you two to start digging into Joe Gerace?
Well, you know, when Mayor Bronson ran for office, he promised to end COVID restrictions and address homelessness, right? And both of those fall squarely underneath the health department. So Lex and I thought that Joe Gerace deserved a closer look, and we started going through the resume that he submitted to the Anchorage Assembly last year after Mayor Bronson appointed him. And the education section really jumped out at us because, you know, usually when you make a resume, you list your degrees, the years you got them, the schools you went to, right? But Gerace left off that last part. He didn't say what university gave him an MBA or this master's in physician assistant studies or even these bachelor's degrees he said he had in chemistry and chemical engineering. So that struck us as odd, and we decided to start digging, talking to people who'd crossed paths with him over the years, going through old court records, divorces, bankruptcies, social media, website of this gun store he used to own, his campaigns when he ran for city council back in Washington State a decade ago, all of it. And the more that we dug, the more we found.
Okay, so Lex, you talked to Joe Gerace yesterday. What did he say about all that?
I was expecting a really confrontational conversation, but our hour and a half long phone call was generally pretty cordial. There was a few times, though, that it got a little contentious, like when I asked him where he got the master's degree in physician assistant studies that he claims.
I'll share it with you, Lex. I'm go on to the next question.
I think it would be easier if you could just say the name of the university where you got it.
I didn't say it was a university, did I?
It wasn't from a university?
It is from a university, but I didn't say it was a university. What does my resume say, Lex? You're asking me questions.
Well, that's what I'm wondering is because you didn't list it on the resume.
If you'd like to, again, I will get you copies. Can we move on to the next one? I'm not going to debate this with you. I'm done with this question because you obviously have the information you need.
I don't have the information I need. I mean, I don't know where you got your physician's assistant studies because you haven't listed where that degree is from.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll get you the resume that I submitted to the city, and it has all the things attached.
And so you're not going to tell me where it's from?
No, I'm going to share it with you. You asked a question. I'm going to provide it to you today.
So that was Monday. Gerace still hasn't provided it as of Tuesday afternoon. He did admit that he had never been licensed as a physician's assistant, as he sometimes claimed. And that contradicts what he told the Bronson administration last year when he said he'd been one since the early 1990s. Gerace did tell me where he claims to have gotten his master's in business administration. That's a place called Henry Cogswell College in Everett, Washington. But that's impossible. The school didn't give out MBAs when Gerace said he went there. It was a tiny school, just 200 students or so. And Henry Cogswell College went out of business in 2006. The college sent all of its students' records to an office in Washington state government so that alumni could still get their transcripts. We asked that office to look through their files for us, and they also said they have no record of Gerace ever going there, so it totally didn't check out.
We also found 4 public records where Gerace listed his educational credentials in the years since he supposedly got those 2 master's degrees, and none of them mention anything about grad school. So, for example, in the year 2000, he was trying to get his child support payments reduced, and he fills out a form where he swears under penalty of perjury that the highest level of education he had was a bachelor's degree. That was 2 years after he now claims to have earned his 2nd master's degree. So that totally contradicts his resume. In fact, the only part of Joe Gerace's educational background we were able to confirm was that he spent 3 years at a community college in Virginia. But that school has no record of giving him a degree either. In fact, Northern Virginia Community College said he reapplied there just 1.5 years ago. The school says he wanted to pursue general studies and emergency medicine. Those are associate degree programs, and he didn't end up enrolling.
Okay, one thing that stood out were claims that he made about military service. So what about that? What about his National Guard service?
Yeah, that's interesting too. So shortly after Mayor Bronson takes office, Joe Gerace sends an email to one of Bronson's aides, and he includes this long list of qualifications, and one of them is Lieutenant Colonel Alaska Guard. Now, at first, we kind of just took that at face value. You can Google Joe Gerace, and you'll find pictures of him in uniform. But at that point, you know, we're learning this stuff about education, so we start checking everything. I contact the Army. They run his name through their databases, and their records show Gerace hasn't served since the 1990s, and his rank when he left the Army Reserve in 1999 was E4 Specialist. That is a junior enlisted rank. It's just one step above private. And so that's way below Lieutenant Colonel, which is a high-ranking officer.
And then we figured out that the rank Gerace was claiming was from something called the Alaska State Defense Force. That's a volunteer-based organization with about 200 members, mostly former military, but they aren't part of the U.S. Armed Forces. They do use ranks that mirror the military's, so that's why Gerace was calling himself a Lieutenant Colonel. He even asked employees at a vaccine site he was in charge of in 2021 to call him Colonel Joe. The Defense Force does help out the Guard sometimes during natural disasters, but the National Guard says it's definitely not the same thing as being in the Guard. And that's how the Bronson administration identified Gerace to the media and to the Anchorage Assembly.
And the other thing the Guard said is that when a member of the Defense Force tries to pass themselves off as a member of the Guard, that they could face consequences. And in fact, we learned yesterday that the Alaska State Defense Force has called a special meeting to look into Gerace.
And then just real quick, Curtis, didn't Gerace also claim to be a combat veteran? What did you find out about that?
Oh yeah, right. That was actually when he applied for that job running the vaccination site that he had right before he was health director. In his resume that he submitted to Visit Healthcare, he claimed under the military section of his resume that he had 24 years of service. That's 3 times as much as the Army's records show. And he said he had 5 combat deployments. Lex asked him about that yesterday, and Joe Gerace said he had no explanation for that. He admitted that he has never been in combat.
So what does the Bronson administration say?
Well, we finally heard back from them this afternoon when the mayor sent out a press release describing the news about Gerace as, quote, shocking. And he announced he's launching what he called an in-depth investigation into Gerace's hiring and the city's human resources hiring process moving forward. That's a major change from yesterday when the mayor wrote that he would miss Gerace's, quote, dedication, hard work, and commitment to help our city's underserved. The city spokesperson on Monday also called me and told me the information that I had presented to him about Gerace's credentials were inaccurate and false. The mayor has offered no explanation detailing what, if any, steps his administration took to verify Gerace's credentials before he was nominated.
And the other thing that we found is that Bronson and the Assembly were both warned that Gerace's resume looked fishy. A former employee of Gerace's wrote an email to the Assembly and also testified in a closed-door Assembly meeting that Gerace's credentials didn't seem to add up to her. But immediately after that, the Assembly voted to confirm him anyway.
Well, I gotta wonder, what are those Assembly members saying now?
I talked to a few of them today, and they said they felt lied to during the confirmation process. They said they acted as well as they could on the information given to them about Gerace's credentials, which we now know are false. West Anchorage Assemblymember Cameron Perez-Verdia, who voted to confirm Gerace, said the Bronson administration needs to answer questions about what it knew or it could lose public trust.
You begin to question not just this one hire, but many hires, right? You wonder whether the administration has done background checks and has done verification of degrees of the many people that they've brought forward.
Another assembly member, Forrest Dunbar of East Anchorage, also said he regrets his vote to confirm Gerace last year, and he pointed his finger at one person in particular.
I think we need to hear more from Nikki Shabaka, the head of HR, about how he was vetted, about how people in general are vetted, and how this mistake got through.
Assembly members say they want more information from the Bronson administration to make sure this doesn't happen again. Chris Constant, the Assembly Vice Chair, said the Assembly Rules Committee will discuss their options on Thursday.
Have you heard any more from Joe Gerace about your investigation?
Just a little. He's sent me a handful of emails yesterday, including some, he says, from the hospital where he was being treated. And he sent me a note today. He promised to send information, including copies of his degrees, soon. But as of Tuesday afternoon, he hadn't sent them to me.
Okay, well, that was Alaska Public Media's Lex Trinan and American Public Media's Curtis Gilbert. Guys, thanks for being here.
No problem.
Thank you, KZ.
And you can read more about this story at alaskapublic.org. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a rural school district is making it easier for local people to become teachers.
Having teachers in the classroom who do have that full understanding really puts education where it should be, which is in the hands of the parents and the community.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Everyone knows eating fruits and veggies promotes a long and healthy life. It's important to make every bite count. Alaskans are lucky to have greens and berries from the land, as well as fresh, frozen, and canned. When it comes to living a long and healthy life, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by USDA SNAP Ed.
A crew member of a cruise ship in Juneau waters is presumed dead after going overboard Monday night. Residents reported seeing an emergency flare around 11 p.m. Monday. The Coast Guard began its search that night with a local response boat and a Jayhawk helicopter from Air Station Sitka. Coast Guard Petty Officer Ian Gray says the Coast Guard suspended its search for the 31-year-old crew member just before noon today.
We searched for 38 nautical miles around the area for approximately 11 hours and concluded that with no results, we would end the search.
Gray offered condolences to the crew member's family. The missing crew member was on board Holland America's Koningsdam. In a statement Tuesday afternoon, the cruise line said camera footage showed that the crew member, quote, likely went overboard intentionally. The National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is available 24/7. You can call or text 988. Two men in state corrections custody while facing charges have died at an Anchorage jail in the last week. 62-year-old David Eric Bristow was pronounced dead Monday at the Anchorage Correctional Complex, according to the Alaska Department of Corrections. He's the eighth person to die in department custody this year. Yesterday, the department reported the death of 34-year-old Austin Earl Wilson, also at the Anchorage Correctional Complex. The agency said no foul play is suspected in either case. Causes of death were not provided. Late last month, the department reported the death of 91-year-old James Patrick Wheeler at the Goose Creek Correctional Center. The department said he had been in its custody since 1993 and was serving a sentence in a murder case. The first of four men charged as teenagers and convicted of murdering 16-year-old Palmer resident David Grunwald in 2016 has been sentenced to 99 years in prison. Eric Almendinger, now 22, was also just 16 when Grunwald went missing in November 2016, kicking off a massive search effort in the Palmer area. The searchers found Grunwald's burned Ford Bronco, but it wasn't until more than 2 weeks later that one of Allmendinger's accomplices led Alaska State Troopers to Grunwald's body. That's according to testimony in Allmendinger's trial, which ended with a jury convicting him of murder, kidnapping, and arson. There was never a clear motive for the killing. Prosecutors said the group of teens, including Allmendinger, Austin Barrett, Bradley Renfro, and Dominic Johnson, lured Grunwald to a trailer at Allmendinger's house where they attacked him. Prosecutors said the group took Grunwald to a secluded spot in the Butte area just south of Palmer, where one of them fatally shot him. A judge handed down the 99-year sentence for Allmendinger on Monday. Barrett pleaded guilty and received a sentence of 45 years in prison. Juries convicted Johnson, who was sentenced to 99 years, and Renfro, who was set for sentencing this week. Schools across rural Alaska often struggle to find and retain teachers. The Lower Kuskokwim School District has a program that helps get local people into those positions. KYUK's Will McCarthy has more.
On Thursday, all the new teachers for the Lower Kuskokwim School District huddled in the cafeteria at Bethel Regional High School for a welcome orientation. Most of them are new to rural Alaska. Some of them are even new to the country. But there is one teacher here today who went to class right down the hall.
I am Zachariah Pleasant, born and raised here in beautiful Bethel, Alaska. I am going to be a first grade teacher at ME School. That is where I went to school many, many, many moons ago.
Pleasant graduated from Bethel Regional High School in 2011, but he wasn't immediately sure what career he wanted to pursue. He came to education almost by accident when he went fishing one day a few years after high school. LKSD's dean of students at the time was on the boat, and he asked Pleasant if he wanted to come interview for a job that Monday.
Monday morning, put on a shirt, thinking I was going to go in for an interview, and they said, oh, here's the paperwork. I'm in. And absolutely loved it, loved working with the kids.
After working for years in special education as an intensive needs aide, Pleasant decided to take the next step and get his teaching credentials. Now, next Wednesday, after 6 years of studying and interning as a student teacher, Pleasant will be a first grade teacher at the same elementary school he attended. Teaching in his hometown is a dream job, but it wouldn't have been possible without a long-standing grow-your-own program within the school district called the Career Ladder. Here's Erin Haviland, the Assistant Superintendent of Human Resources and Student Services.
We want the education to be from local people, right? I mean, that's how we build sustainability, is by people that want to stay in our region.
Haviland helps run the Career Ladder, also known as the TEACH program, which is an initiative within LKSD that allows community members to pursue their teaching credentials. If you're accepted into the program, the school district pays for your entire college degree at the University of Alaska Fairbanks Kuskokwim campus, as well as books and other materials. The goal of the program is to recruit more promising potential teachers from the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta who know the area, know the culture, and might want to stick around. Teacher retention is consistently a problem in rural Alaska, and there's a teacher shortage nationwide. LKSD is no exception, but while some other districts are seriously struggling to find teachers in the post-COVID education environment, LKSD has about the same number of open positions as any other year. Here's LKSD's Haviland again.
Certainly our career ladder has really helped staunch the effects that other districts are seeing.
Beyond filling positions in remote schools, the TEACH program also helps build a staff that's culturally fluent. Both the LKSD board and community members have made it a priority to teach elementary school students in both English and Yuktun. But to achieve that, the school district needs certified Yupik speaking teachers. The TEACH program helps recruit Yupik speakers from the region who often share a similar background with their students. Haviland says those shared experiences are a boon for any teacher trying to mentor and connect with their class.
No one really understands the region we live in unless you've grown up here. And so having teachers in the classroom who do have that full understanding really puts education where it should be, which is in the hands of the parents and the community. That's what public education is about.
Anne Marie Tinker, a second grade teacher in Kong who just completed the TEACH program, says the program comes with challenges. Usually people are working full time as they study for their credentials. Still, she thinks it will help people become teachers who wouldn't have been able to otherwise. And that could help preserve the language and culture of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta.
The Yupik teacher numbers are growing within our district because of the career ladder and the TEACH program. It helped me.
For Zachary Pleasant, the new first grade teacher, he's just excited to be contributing to the next generation of the town that raised him.
It's just amazing to watch the individual growth and steps that a student can take, just watching them grow into becoming who they are going to be. And you kind of get to help them put on their shoes and see where they want to go.
In Bethel, I'm Will McCarthy.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, celebrating 45 years of Alaska operations. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
A group of federal officials is in Alaska this week to learn about the unique challenges the state faces when it comes to broadband connectivity. They spoke at a broadband summit this morning in Anchorage. Assistant Commerce Secretary Alan Davidson told the audience that the federal infrastructure bill, signed by President Joe Biden, will send potentially billions of dollars to Alaska over the next 5 years to bolster broadband access.
This is a once-in-a-generation opportunity. People say that, but it's quite true. These kinds of resources, they don't come along very often. We're going to spend tens of billions of dollars in this country. We're going to spend billions here in Alaska, most likely.
Davidson described Alaska as one of the least connected states in the country when it comes to broadband due to its small population across a large landscape. Alaska Federation of Natives co-chair Anna Hoffman said the federal broadband funding could be a huge help. During one of the summit's panels, she underscored the need to bridge the digital divide between Alaska and the rest of the nation.
All of the players have a chance to participate in this process and really bring solutions to our communities that are so desperate for them and look forward to them. And it's really bringing this first-class service to first-class people, and we deserve it.
Davidson also announced an agreement between the National Telecommunications and Information Administration and the Bureau of Indian Affairs to streamline the permitting process for high-speed internet projects on tribal lands. Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy described the announcement as huge.
You don't want to start gearing up folks to be trained to be laying down fiber to the tune of thousands of individuals or connecting some of the broadband, and there's no job yet because we're still drawing out the permitting process.
At the summit, Governor Dunleavy also signed a bill that establishes an Office of Broadband, which will coordinate federal funding the state receives for broadband projects. The bill also establishes a statewide broadband advisory board. The summit was facilitated by Senator Dan Sullivan, who will accompany the federal officials on trips to Bethel and other Yukon-Kuskokwim villages, as well as Kodiak later this week. They already made stops in Fairbanks and Tanana. Anchorage may soon be the latest city to host an Indigenous food lab as part of a nationwide effort to revitalize Native food systems. The lab would include a commercial kitchen and teaching space for Native chefs and food producers to gather and explore Indigenous ingredients. Sean Sherman is a chef and owner of Owamni, an Indigenous restaurant in Minnesota that uses local seasonal ingredients and avoids post-colonial foods like dairy, processed sugar, and chicken. He also co-founded two nonprofits, the Sioux Chef, that's S-I-O-U-X, and North American Traditional Indigenous Food Systems, which opened an Indigenous food lab in Minneapolis in 2020. Sherman visited Alaska recently to explore the potential for a new food lab. He spoke on Talk of Alaska last week about the concept.
We want a regional center point for the region to be able to help develop more Indigenous foodways and help with a lot of education and support and training so we could start to see a lot more Indigenous foodways moving forward and seeing a lot more Indigenous food producers come out of this.
Sherman says in addition to a kitchen and classroom, they also hope the lab will include a market where producers can sell their products in a small cafe or restaurant. They're still working to identify a local space, but they hope to continue expanding the concept. Sherman says highlighting culturally relevant food and giving people the tools to feed themselves more sustainably can help address Alaska's reliance on products from outside the state. Well, the Kowalungan tribe hosted an annual culture camp last week in Unalaska. During the week-long celebration of Ununga culture, mentors passed down knowledge and skills and even started a new tradition of their own. KUCB's Laura Lynn Cruz reports.
It's a cool, cloudy morning on Humphrey Cove. But inside the main tent at Camp Kagayu, dancers are taking the stage. About a dozen kids are doing chugga. This Atka dance tells the story of a successful halibut fishing trip, and it's been taught at Camp Q every summer for the past 25 years. Sharon Savarni Livingston helped lead the first Camp Q back in 1997. She says it plays an important role in preserving and passing down cultural knowledge. Savarni Livingston teaches traditional uses of medicinal and edible plants. She says people were still using plants traditionally in the 1960s, but no one passed that down to her when she was a kid. And by the 90s, that knowledge seemed to have gone dormant. To learn which plants could be eaten or used as medicine, she had to take her elders out walking in the tundra.
I left for a long time and I came back 20 years later and they said they weren't using the plants anymore and they couldn't remember them. And I said, what? No, you can't have forgotten them. And they didn't forget them. It just took 10 years of having myself walk the elders out and smell plants and talk about them to get it back. So I don't want to have anybody dragging me around in the hills when I'm 90, so I try to teach everybody.
Every year, Camp Q includes classes on bentwood hat making, Ununggam tanu, weaving, and sealskin and gut sewing. For the 25th anniversary, camp coordinator and skin sewing teacher Anfisha Tudiakoff also wanted to do something new. An all-women sea otter hunting team. Community member Lila Roll helped with the hunt and harvest.
Well, we took the skiff out and we went sea otter hunting over on the Split Top Mountain.
They plan to bring the pelt back to Camp Q next year as a new project to work on with the kids. Savarni Livingston says Camp Q is growing and changing while maintaining the traditions that got the camp started 25 years ago.
Well, 25 years, you know, it's pretty amazing that we've been able to sustain it this long. When we started, it was very, very small, and most of our mentors are no longer with us. So it's nice that we've been able to continue teaching people to teach everything.
The Culture Camp ran July 31st through August 6th. In Unalaska, I'm Laura Lynn Cruz.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Lex Trinan, Wesley Early, and Adeline Baxter in Anchorage, Curtis Gilbert in St. Paul, Minnesota, Jeremy Shea and Yvonne Crumry in Juneau, Will McCarthy in Bethel, and Laura Lynn Cruz in Unalaska. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby, Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
And by
Alaska Air Cargo, serving the commerce and business needs of 20 Alaska communities, from Adak to Barrow to Ketchikan. More information at alaskacargo.com.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.